And you're very welcome to the award-winning Solid Foundations Property Podcast. We have, yes, of course, won our very first award. Lisa, last Saturday night in Killiney Castle in Dublin. So I know you've been celebrating since that, haven't you?
Yeah, I certainly have. So yeah, we won the Make It Happen Property Podcasting, Podcasting Award. There was four of us in the category. And we won it, and we are delighted to win it. I'm sure you have the trophy there somewhere, Porrick.
Hidden from the kids because we'll break it. But this is about resilience. This is about not giving up on your dream, and this is about pushing forward. We've been up there before, and we haven't come home with. I know I said silverware on the LinkedIn message, but you know what I meant, Lisa. It was the first piece of silverware to come down the road. It is glass, okay. It is glass, all right. But it's an award, and we had great crack, and it just keeps us doing what we're doing. Giving out as much information as we can and helping as many people as we can as well. Because, Lisa, on the night, it's great me and you having a conversation and bringing on these unbelievable guests, which we have, and we have one today for our listeners, which will blow your socks off. But it's good to meet people who listen to our podcast and they say, geez, I learned so much of that. And you feel great after, don't you?
Yeah, you do. You do. You really do. I've had loads of people reach out to me and, you know, I'm doing a bit of a collaboration with one of our listeners. She's an interior designer, fabulous interior designer. So she's helping me with one of my properties that I'm doing up at the moment, or two of them. And I'm helping her kind of with raising finance. And it's all from the back of the podcast. She just listened to me. She reached out to me. And yeah, it's great. It's great that everyone can help each other, you know, and that's what it's all about.
Well, we have an absolute treat for you today. You're chatting about raising finance, and I had the pleasure of meeting this man up in Belfast and just loved his energy and has been a legend down through the years. I'm delighted to say today's guest on the Solid Foundations Property Podcast is the one and only Mark Dalton. And if you don't know who Mark is, get your phone out, start Googling Mark, but wait to hear what he has to say. He is, of course, an investor, mentor, trainer, and founder of Angel Getting and the UK Property Network Live. He's been from a market trader way back many moons ago. Mark has turned his mindset shift into a property entrepreneur, mastering buy-to-lets, HMOs, distress deals, and creative finance. And I was in Belfast, as I said, back last year, and we all go in courses, Lisa, and we all listen to people talk. But I think the best way of learning is really, really, really breaking it down to small, understandable little parts, because it can get complicated if you allow it, and people can make it complicated. But Mark, how are you? You know better, man, to tell us about who you are and what you do. So maybe just tell us all a bit more about you, Mark. You're very welcome to the podcast.
Okay, all right. Guys, Parik, Lisa, really appreciate you inviting me on here. It's an honor, and well done for getting your awards. Yeah. Woo woo boom. Yeah. I mean, it's recognition. And, you know, we all put a lot of hard work in trying to help people. Yeah. I know that you do. And it can be a lonely task when you're trying to help people and you're not getting any feedback. So to get an industry award, well done, guys. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Right. So, guys, a little bit about me. I don't know if you were like me, but I'm sure that you were. That your mum and dad told you to work hard, and if you work hard, you will be fine in life. As long as you work hard, you'll be fine. Well, I found myself at the age of 42, working harder than anybody I knew, that was for sure. Our life was falling apart. I was a street trader. And when I mean a street trader, I don't mean working on the stock market in the centre of London, right? I meant working on the streets, hustling, buying and selling. And I was selling cakes, biscuits and sweets, all that type of stuff. And my normal day started around about 4:15 in the morning when I got up, went down to the market, got there for 5:30, just depending on where it was. And we were spending around about 3-4 hours putting up this stall, right? The objective of the day was take as much money as you can, sell as much as you can, right? So we don't have to put it on back on the van at the end of the day. And there were long days. We didn't have breaks. We didn't have coffee breaks. We didn't have lunch breaks, breakfast breaks. You know, it was to the loo and back, to the loo and back, right? We were just selling, selling, selling all day long. And even though it was a busy stall, we never earned more than £25,000, me and my ex, yeah? And didn't matter what we did, no matter how much more stock we bought, how bigger we made the stall, we never got past that mark. And so it was just sell, sell, sell. We were in a loop. Now, we didn't finish the market. We started breaking it down around about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Took us till about 6:30 to get all the stuff back on the van. And then it was a drive back up to Luton, where I live, from London, around about an hour and a half because of the traffic at that time of day. And I didn't get back in till 8 o'clock at night. So I'd left around about 4:30. It's now 8 o'clock at night. Get back in. Elaine would be saying, Mark, here's a cup of tea. Oldest son would be saying, Dad, Dad, Dad. And I would be saying, in a minute, in a minute, in a minute. I never saw that boy grow up. Yep. Because I was always working. Between 8 and 8:45 in the evening, we were counting the money. It had to be counted. You know, there was reasons, but I won't go into that now. But we had to get that money counted. And even at 8:45 at night, we still had to go back out and load the vans for the following day. So it wasn't until 10 o'clock at night that I sat down and had my tea, as I call it, or dinner, as some of you posh people might say. Yep. And between 10 o'clock and 10:45, I would watch the national news and I would watch the local news. And at 10:45, I would go to bed and I would repeat that the following day. I did that 6 days a week for 16 years, right? And I worked hard. And because of it, right, Elaine, she got cheesed off with the life, you know, because we were always, you know, you've all watched the Trotters, Fools and Horses. This time next year, we'll be a millionaire. Well, that was the belief system of the people on the market. It really was. This time next year, there's going to be a break somewhere. There's got to be a break somewhere. And the crux of the story is Elaine ran off with a local plumber. You can't.
Sorry for laughing, Mark.
Yeah. No, no. I can laugh now, right? Because she runs the portfolio. We're good friends and everything. But I had two kids living in separate houses. You know, when you're growing up and you get together. I mean, me and this girl were together since we were 12 at school. Right. And at the age of bloody 40 there, right, it all fell apart. And that wasn't my plan. You know, that wasn't the life plan. The life plan was to be better than I was. And I saw people that were in classes that were lower than me at school. Not that I was in the top class. I found football and girls at a very young age. Yeah. And they were just flying past me. And what is it? So I started searching, and a lot of people that will be coming on this podcast will be searching as well, right? And they want the answers. They want the clues. How can they change their life? And I'd been searching for years, right? Never really doing anything about it, not mixing with the right people. And what happened was I was at home On a Monday morning when we should have been at a Kingston market. So I don't know why I was at home on a Monday morning. The TV was on in the corner, right? The Oprah Winfrey show was on, right? So what's the chances of that happening? And on walks this chap called Robert Kiyosaki. And he just said three words: income generating assets. And boom, that was it. My life changed at that very moment. Income generating assets. To me, what that meant was the assets do the work, right? Not me. And working all the hours that I was doing, that was my solution. I'd never heard that phrase, that thought, that pattern, that reframe of, right, get the assets working for you. You don't do the work. Your job is to acquire the assets, right, and let the assets do the work. And I was in the lounge with my ex, and you won't be, guess what we were arguing about? Money.
Money. Yeah?
We were arguing about money, and I told her to shut up, maybe very abruptly as well. Look, shut up. I need to listen to this guy. And at the end of it, I ran upstairs, and it was old internet. You had to wind it up. Yep, you had to wind it up, and I went online. This is May 2000, and bought the book Rich Dad Poor Dad. Yeah, and I also bought another book because it recommended at that time. Right, if you buy this book, think about this book as well. And it was a book by a chap called Russ Whitney called Building Wealth. Okay, and I got these books. And I got these books, and I read the Rich Dad, Poor Dad book, and I read the Russ Whitney book. But the Rich Dad, Poor Dad book really got me, right? For 2 years, even though I had some information, I didn't know how to implement it, right? And it was in the book, Robert Kiyosaki had mentioned, you know, go to trainings, go to seminars, get yourself a mentor, get yourself a coach. I did not live in that world. I did not know anybody that could help or guide me, or anybody that I did know that had bought property. They were just buying property through luck. They got some extra money. They didn't follow a strategy. It was just, right, I've got some money. Oh, I might as well buy a property, right? And I didn't have money. I was £80,000 in debt. You know, if you look back on my goals thing that I wrote down, I didn't even realize I was writing things down, goals. In my accounts book, I was saving £40 a month into a Abbey National Building Society account, right, for the deposit on my first buy to let. Yeah, so I knew property would work, right? I'd got an experience of property as a young man. I'd moved to London. I was renting, I was paying £210 in a place called Hounslow Road, East Dulwich, not Hounslow Road, Townley Road, East Dulwich. And a friend of mine said, Mark, it's cheaper to buy than it is to rent. I was paying £210 for this flat in Townsley Road. And actually, I could buy this house in Hounslow Road, yeah, where is it, one bedroom garden flat, for £150 a month, saving £60 a month. Doesn't sound a lot. 60 quid a month. But in those days, that was 20 bottles of wine in Brahms and Liszt in Covent Garden, right? And it went on that as well, right? So I bought that for £17,000. I went off to Saudi Arabia to do some work as a very young man, and that's what gave me the entrepreneurial spirit and setting up the market stalls. But by the time I came back from there, 4.5 years later, this flat had gone up from 17 to 68. So a new property worked. And I sold it. Nobody told me that I could own two houses. If I'd have kept that flat, the last time it sold in 2017 was £560,000. All somebody had to tell me, oh, no, you can have two houses, you know. You can have two. I did not mix with the right people. So you know, a podcast like this and the networks that are out there, I would encourage you to all be rubbing shoulders with other people that are doing it and asking questions of people, right? Because if you don't ask those questions, nobody's ever going to tell you. Yep. Okay. So I knew so I knew property would work, but I didn't know how to do it. And I bought this book by a chap called Russ Whitney, Building Wealth. And lo and behold, in May 2002, 2 years, I got this information and I couldn't do anything with it because I had no money. Yep. And, you know, I looked around me, I can't afford any of this. Yep. And this is the case of most people that are looking at property. You know, oh, I can't do property because I've got no money. The other one is they'll say, I've got no time. Well, you've just heard what I was doing on the market stalls, right? And I still found time to build a portfolio. Okay, so in May 2002, through my door came a marketing campaign from Russ Whitney. They were setting up in the UK. They ran a training company over in America. And I was one of the very first people to go in on those trainings. And at the end of that training, right, they wanted another £16,000 to go on to do some advanced stuff. Well, I knew just by having the book, I'd done nothing, right? And I knew that I'd gone in on the training, but I still knew that I didn't have all the answers, right? And part of that package was bringing in a mentor. Yep. And that, to me, was the bit that I needed. Yeah, I couldn't turn the knowledge into actually actions. Yeah. Okay. Right. So I did that. And I remember I didn't have the money that night either. Yeah. Right. I didn't have the money. £16,000. I never spent £16,000. But that Saturday night, I went out and phoned everybody that I knew. Well, there were several things that went on. First of all, I was in a group of people that were very negative. Right. In the local pub, they're saying, oh, it's £16,000. It's a deposit on a house. Yeah. Well, in hindsight, £16,000 was a deposit on a house. But the knowledge I gained as being able to buy me many houses, create financial freedom and have income streams that are far greater than people's normal wages. Yep. Okay. Right, so in there, but I met a handful of people and we went to another pub and one of those was a broker and he says, Mark, you know, you probably got £26,000 there, right, in your house, £26,000. And if you refinance that, you know, you've got £16,000 for the training and £10,000 for your purchases. Now, he wasn't part of the group as a trainer. He was a student just like me. And I thought, okay, that's a way, right? So, but I still didn't have the money. And because I was in conflict with my ex at the time, if I said something was black, she would say it was white, you know? And I stood on Gloucester Road tube station in London and pleaded with her to let me take equity out of the house to do this training. And she did. Yeah. Right. And because she did, that's why I look after her in the way that I do. Yeah. And she is a big part of my life still. Yeah. Okay. Even though she ran off with a plumber, and that's funny because she because she gives him hell and I just go, oh, my God, that could have been me.
You dodged the bullet there, Mark.
There we go. But I still didn't have the money and they wanted the money the following day. You know, and this is about desire. I don't know how other people are, but I realized that if I stayed where I was doing what I was doing, I was destined to be poor. Right. And I did see poverty on those markets in Northwest London. And I didn't want that. That's why I was searching. That's why I wanted change. And I also realized that if I became sick or ill, nobody's going to pay me. I'm self-employed. You're on the heap, mate. Off you go. And that scared me. Right. And so doing these things, it might sound as though it's a big leap. it was more scary for me to stay where I was than try and work out how to build a property portfolio. So I still didn't have the money. And I phoned up one of my suppliers who sold me the cakes, biscuits and sweets. And I said, this is on a Saturday night at 9 o'clock, right? And I said, Barry. And Barry knew the first day I read Rich Dad Poor Dad, I was telling Barry about it because he was an entrepreneur. He was a business owner anyway. So it was good to get that. And Barry said to me at the time, oh, Mark, are you sure? Are you sure you're not being scammed? And all these types of things. He was trying to protect me. I get all of that, right? But I was determined to make this work. And he said, well, how are you going to pay me? You know? And I said, look, Barry, yeah, right. I've been coming and buying from you for the last 12 years. Yeah. Right. So you know quite a lot about me already. Right. The plan is we're going to refinance the house, get £26,000 out, 16 for the training, 10 to get me going a bit. Yeah. And he said, what happens if you don't get the refinance? Good question. Very good question. And this phrase has become one of my trademarks. That, and I said to Barry in less polite words than this, but basically, right, if this deal doesn't work, right, which it won't, which it will do because it is so good, right, I'll make sure you get your money back no matter what, yeah, right? And he took my word for that, yeah? And lo and behold, I started on the training, right? And within the first year of that training, doing the buy-to-let training, doing a distress training, doing a momentum training, as they called it. In fact, they called it Millionaire University in those days when I think about it. And I bought 10 buy-to-lets, not using a penny of my own. They showed me how to raise finance. Yeah, and I went out and raised that finance. Yeah, I went out and raised that finance using the techniques. And I got into HMOs. I was buying buy-to-lets up in Blackpool, good income strategy, right? When I did a flip in Blackpool, my mentor says, come on, we're going to take that money and drop it in London. So we've got a capital strategy running. I started buying HMOs here in Luton and over in Stevenage. And people will say, oh, there must have been some money. There was pennies. There was pennies. This stuff was put together by using other people's money. And because of what I was doing, that company picked me up. And you can see over here behind me a course called Creative Finance. Well, me and this other chap, Lindsay Hopkins, we delivered that 143 times over the next 15, 16, 17 years and impacted absolutely loads of people being able to raise money. You know, I mean, I know that there's mastermind groups wherever you guys are, but I was at my mastermind group on Monday, and in that room there was only 30 people, but there was the best part of £5.5 million in angel finance in that. Now, this £5.5 million isn't to be spent, it's to be put into the correct type of deals where they can refinance and get the majority of the money back, not just raising angel finance for the sake of it. And people will always say to me, Mark, what a waste the market stalls were. No, the market stalls weren't a waste at all. It was my training ground. It was an expensive education because it took so long, but it taught me hard work. Yeah. It taught me cash flow management. It taught me how to sell. It taught me how to buy right. Yeah. And taught me about creative strategies, which I didn't know were creative until I started studying finance properly. You know, I mentioned Barry Lewis, my supplier. I would go up to West Bromwich, buy the stock, give him a check, and he wouldn't bank that check till the following Tuesday. So I was using supplier finance to piece it all together. I didn't know that that was even a name then, but it's very common practice out there in the world. And because I've been doing this now, it's 2025, 2003, so that's what, sorry, 2002, so that's 23 years, right? I can tell you the plan works. If you buy income generating properties and just keep collecting the income, right, every year your income is increasing, right, without you doing much. Yeah, yes, you can add more properties to you if you want. I don't add more properties. I'm 66 now, right? I've learned other strategies as well to build wealth, because that's really what we're all doing here. We're not just buying properties because we like properties. We're buying properties because we want the wealth building capabilities of it, because property increases in value over the years, yeah? Except Blackpool, just so as you know. At Blackpool, right? But stuff here, you know, the Blackpool stuff works because it was an income strategy. That was what it was. Yeah, that's it, full stop. It bring, you know, houses up there now, cash flow wise, are bringing in to me £500 because my mortgages are down here, right? A normal person getting into that area today, £250. You know, that first flat in London that my mentor told me to buy with the proceeds from a flip, she said to me, "Mark, you know, how much is your mortgage at home?" And it was 100,000. She says, "Right, we're going to buy this flat in London, and when it goes up to 200,000, you're going to sell it and pay your mortgage off." Now, that's financial savvy. That was part of a wealth plan that my mentor gave me. To build wealth. And as I say, it wasn't just about property. You know, I mean, the flavor of the month right now is gold, right? Well, gold has actually been the best investment percentage wise, right? Of all of the things that I've done. Yep. Right. However, gold doesn't give you an income, and you have to buy gold at the market price. Whereas with property, we can leverage it. If you're not putting any of your own money in, right, what's the returns? And that's why people can go from, you know, I'm not going to say I was destitute because I had an income stream as long as my health was there, right? But from people that have nothing to being up there, and you get people go, "How the hell did you do that?" Right. And you go other people's money and they go, "Oh, no, I can't do that. That's risky." It's risky if you don't know what you're doing. Yeah. You know, one of my main gripes at present is that people don't know what deals look like. They've got no idea what a deal looks like. They'll see people having done other stuff, but they don't understand what's happened. Right. And that's a big gap in the market in today's world for me. Yeah. Big gap in the market. And people are scared because they don't know how to do things. You know, this week, you know, I do the coaching and mentoring training, all the stuff. But this week, I probably had about four people. "Mark, can I run this deal past me?" Well, anybody that's running a deal past me is telling me one thing. They don't understand what they're doing. They've got no idea what they're doing, right? And they should be able to see. So my phrase to everybody here is, if you're going to be buying a property, ask yourself this basic question, right? What's in it for me? What's in it for me? So the day that you buy it, yeah, or you've got it refitted and refinanced, right? Is it going to put money in your pocket or take money out of your pocket? Then ask yourself, what's going to happen over the next 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years? I wish somebody had told me that 30-year bit all those years back. Yeah, and you can see the values were within the properties. The great bit is you know, I'm 66 now. You know, all my mates are retiring and the same, "Mark, why are you carrying on doing what you're doing? You know, you've made it." Whoa, do I want to stop working and stop living and stop having purpose in my life? No, right? Doing all this property stuff, business stuff, it's grateful. It really is fun. And anybody that's in business, you'll see them. They don't want to retire. They want to carry on because they're having a great time playing life. Yeah. So the outcome, guys, just by reading that one book for $12.99, because people always say to me, Mark, what's the best investment? You know, what's the best one? Yep. And it's that, because it changed my mind. It totally reframed me into thinking that I needed money. All I needed was education to get myself in there. Okay, so hopefully that's a little bit about me. Fire away and ask me some questions, guys, because there's loads. And, you know, I'm Parik, you've seen me before. Lisa, you're probably thinking, how the hell did he do that?
So I had a similar story to you, Mark. And Jesus, it was some story, by the way, Mark. I usually I tune out sometimes, but this time I was completely in the zone with you. So it's a great story. Thanks for sharing it. So I started out very similar to you. I had the corporate job. I suppose it's a bit dissimilar. I had the corporate job, but I just knew it wasn't for me. I was desperate to get out. And Rich Dad Poor Dad was the book that I read. And again, that whole thing about income generating assets. And you think, you know, like as an accountant, I thought I knew everything there was to know about like the finance world and how to raise finance. And I was working for all these companies that were making the big money and they were raising the capital and that. But just for me, it's not for me, because I think you get your money education from your family. And like that, my family was work hard, exactly what you're saying, work hard. And it was never like we didn't really have many entrepreneurs in our family, you know, so you just kind of follow your family's footsteps, I suppose. So, yeah, like that, I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I did a bit of online training and then I came over to the UK to sit some in-person training in and around COVID time, just after COVID. And it was invaluable. Now, the amount of money I spent on training has been a lot. But I love learning. I absolutely love learning. And I suppose there's a different type. When somebody really wants to get into property or like, you know, get back financial freedom, I suppose it all depends on how comfortable you are. So even though I had a comfortable salary, I was very, very uncomfortable being there. I knew it wasn't for me. I couldn't be there any longer. It was really stifling. But I do see a lot of people kind of going to these training events where their job, you know, sometimes they're just a bit too comfortable in their job. So therefore they go to the training and they might, you know, spend a bit of money on the training, but they don't necessarily take as much action as what they should do if they really want that financial freedom. And I suppose it's all about kind of having that comfort in the job, you know.
To me there, Lisa, it's all about desire. The pain, yeah, of you doing the corporate job, yeah, right, being in that hamster wheel, just knowing that, is this it? Is this really it? Right, and you knew you had more potential, a lot more potential. Yeah, yeah, you had desires. I've written there, the more you learn, the more you earn. And I'll guarantee that's happening to you. The more you're learning, the more you're earning.
Yeah. And surrounding yourself with people who are doing it, or even if they're not as far along with you as you on the property journey, like they've got other skill sets to bring to the table and they're teaching you all their other skill sets, and just getting with people who are, you know, sharing their information and sharing their knowledge. Yeah, I completely agree with you.
I was at my mastermind group there the other day, and one of the things that we were doing, right, what's been the cock-ups of the last 12 months, right? And it's a great exercise that we do regularly. Well, when I say regularly, I'm talking once a year. Yeah, we've been doing it donkey's years, right? And it's the lessons that people get from the cock-ups, and everybody else hears it and you go, right, I'm not making that mistake.
I love that. We should run one of those on the podcast, Pouring, maybe next month.
learn the hard way or the easy way. And look at it. It's not, as I say, it's not an easy. It's more of a mindset shift. I think that when there's desire and when there's drive, and you know, you'll find your level. But Mark, suppose from breaking it down to getting into the creative finance aspect of it, you know. you have a really good way of explaining it. Maybe could I touch in on that with you. When you've got a deal and you're trying to raise that finance, you're on the end of the phone and you're shaking, but you know you have to make that phone call. What's the process?
The process starts long before you've got the deal. Right. Right. So to me, there's two main skills to start off with in property. There's number one, being able to create deals. I didn't say find, I said create deals, understanding how to create deals, because you know the numbers, you know what's going on. Yep. Right. And a lot of people, that's the bit that I, just by getting the phone calls that I get, people don't know the numbers, right? And number two is being able to raise the finance. The main one, though, is once you're building your portfolio, is knowing how to manage that portfolio, manage the cash flow, manage the assets, right? Most people spend all the time working on buying the houses, right? But then don't spend their time on managing the portfolio. And that's why they fail in property. Yep. Okay, right. So the way that I get people to think about this is that it's a two phase process. First phase is we're going out there and we're not going hunting for one individual angel or source of finance. We're going out there to build a list, a source of potential people that will finance us. And the way that we do that is we are talking to people, we're using a business plan, and we are using social media. And at the core of it, the message is, if you meet anybody, you're saying to them, or they're saying to you how you are, right? If they don't say to you how you are, you've got to stop them and say, how are you? Because eventually they'll say, how are you? Right? And it's a standard script. I'm great, thanks, but I'm really glad I started doing that property stuff. Right? And just by saying that, right, that creates intrigue. I'm not asking for money. Well, not asking for money at all. All I'm saying is I'm great, thanks, but I'm really glad I started doing that property stuff. If they did not know I was doing property, they now know. So the message is going out there. The seeds are being sown. Yeah. Most people today, right, I can't say most people because that's wrong, but the mindset when people are starting out is, when I've got a deal, I need to go and ask for the money. And that was the way that I was approaching it when I first started. However, right, soon learned it's better to have those conversations, right? Remember how I said about Barry Lewis loaning me the £16,000 for the training? I didn't realize that those 2 years of conversations led to him trusting me to take that money and use it well. Yeah. Okay. So we are sowing the seeds, but we're not asking for money straight away. Whereas if just think about it, if you turn up and say to somebody, Powerick, I've just started that property stuff and I've got a great deal in front of me right now. Well, most people don't know what a great deal looks like to start off with. So that always worries me. Yeah. I need 50 grand. Have you got 50 grand? Right. You're just going to pull back straight away and go, whoa, 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 dude, no way am I doing that. But if I say that property stuff, they'll lean into us. They'll say, well, what are you doing? Well, I'm just going to be buying smelly houses, fixing them up, renting them out. Even better if you've got a visual of what you're doing, like a little one sheet or maybe something, photos on your phone of a distressed property that you can add value to. Yeah, because people understand that. They've been watching Martin Roberts on Homes Under the Hammer for the last 25 years, right? So, and everybody in the UK is obsessed with buying a house, adding value to it, and renting it out or selling it for a profit. Although I'm not a big believer in the flip strategy, because you don't know where the market's going to be at the 6 months, 12 months, 2 years down the road, depending on what type of project you're putting together. Right. Now, if we say that to somebody, right, we don't leave it in the brain. We put it on a sheet of paper and we start writing the names of people that we're talking to. You know, other parts of that conversation, if they're saying, you know, how are you, what are you doing? Yeah, I'm great. Great, thanks, but I'm really glad I started doing that property stuff. What are you doing? Right. You don't go into, well, I read this book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be finding distressed properties. I'm going to force the appreciation, and on the back end, I'm going to refinance it, get all my money back out, and I'm going to collect cash flow for the rest of my life. Whew, that goes over everybody's head, right? Confuse and you lose is the phrase. We've got to keep the language very, very simple. Well, I just buy smelly houses, fix them up and rent them out. That does what it says on the tin. Everybody understands that. If anybody ever asks us why we're doing property, we don't say, well, I want to go and live in Dubai. I want a big Ferrari. I want a bigger house. I want a bigger car.
Lisa, you know Lisa well, don't you?
Fuck off. Yeah. That's what people think of you when you come out with that answer. Yeah. Whereas you say, if you say, I'm doing it for my pension, of course, right, people understand that. People understand that pensions are not what they were, or well, not just not there. Yeah, or they might not be there even. That's the other scare that's still possible, is they might not be there. And it's at a subconscious level, it's letting people know that you're thinking long term. This isn't a short term get rich quick thing. It's just sowing the right seeds, and it is using language. And this basic script that I'm giving you, right? I've worked with absolutely hundreds of and thousands of students just on this script. You know, that's why Powerick says Mark breaks it down. Right. I don't say go out and find an angel. This is what you do to find the angel. Right. These are the conversations, and you keep that going. You don't have that conversation once. Right. If anybody says to you, and you only met them yesterday, right, and they come in and they say to you, how are you today? And you go, great, thanks, but I'm really glad I did start doing that property stuff. I know you've started it. Shut up about it. Right. No, you keep sowing that seed, get it in deeper and deeper and deeper. Yeah. Right. Because yeah, the more they hear it and the more that they know that you're taking it serious, they are starting to watch what you're up to. There's another part now is that we would put a business plan together. I haven't got a business plan to hand with me right now. But, you know, it's just a little plan about what you're planning on doing and where you're planning on doing it. Yeah. And we can hand that to people, right? We get it printed, we get it bound, and we just say to Lisa, you know I'm doing that property stuff, don't you? Well, even if you didn't know, you now know. Right. Just that language is getting it out there. Right. You know I'm doing that property stuff, don't you? Well, I'm just about to go out to my angels, you know, private investors, right, where I'm going to be asking them if they want to get involved in the projects that I'm doing. But I've got this and I've put it together, but nobody else has ever looked at it, right? You couldn't do me a big favour, could you? Just take a look at this for me, right, and give me some feedback, right? Have I sold you what I'm doing? Or what am I really doing? What am I really doing there? I'm getting you to read it and getting you to give me feedback. I didn't ask, did you want to get involved? I didn't ask, did you want to invest with me? There's a thing. Don't ask people to invest with you. Ask them, do they want to get involved? Big difference between those two words. And people will come back to us. People will come back to us and say, oh, you've spelled this wrong. This is all wrong. No matter what they say, right? You just nod, smile, and make, oh, that's a really good point. I must make a note of that. The job has already been done. The business plan has been put in their hands, and it's created the conversation. They don't know this yet.
and I'm full proof of that. You know, I was blown away because it is. I know Mark's explaining it, and you know, we did a full day on it, but it was just that language, that change, that, you know, there's other aspects there. Well, instead of you getting nothing in the bank, I can give you 100 quid a month, or I can give you 200 quid a month. You know, and I think what happens, a lot of people, they get really overwhelmed by the finance, and I you know, you're dealing with big numbers, but you bring it back to the language. The language for me was something going, Jesus, because I'm obviously I'm in sales and I work in sales, and because when you're selling something, let's be honest, you're selling something, but it's how you sell it or how you tell someone that particular value part. You know, buying smelly houses, doing them up and renting them out. That's all we do, you know. It's just, and it is. And the other part of it then is, I suppose, Mark, as you touched on as well, is trying to have that long-term vision with it all. You know, you're looking at it 5 years, 10 years. You're going 30 years' time. And I think that what we did, we went through that particular day. We took up a property from 1980. I think it was in Northern Ireland or whatever. You know, it was $5,000 you bought it for example. Now it's worth whatever. 250 grand. So everyone's kind of very focused on the now as well.
Yeah.
And I suppose it's just trying to open out that vision part as well.
Well, the phrase that I have there, you know, the deals that I did, I call it, we make our money when we buy, so we can see it. We can see, right. So just working with two boys yesterday, doing a project up in the north of England. This is property number 4 or 5 that they've done, right? And it's taken them a while to get the system right, but they've got the system. And this property was a property next to the property that they've just done a refit in, and using the right tactics, finding out who the owner was of the previous property, having the conversations, sowing the seeds. I think they bought it for 20,000 pound refit, so that's 82, and 5,000 in fees, that's 87. Well, it'll value up at 115, so that's about 27,000 pounds increase in value. Yeah, from the 87 to about the 115. Yeah, okay. I always say to people there, right, how long would it take you to earn that £27,000 uplift? And they say, well, you know, 6 months, 3 months, you know, a month. Yeah, some cheeky sucker will shout out, right? Or other people say a year, yeah. But then I say, how long would it take you to save that £27,000? And they'll go, a long time. Okay, well, that £27,000 uplift is also, so they'll get the majority of the money back, yeah, if not all the money back, and it's throwing off £300 a month. Well, £300 a month is £3,600 a year, right? And how much do you need in a bank account to give you £3,600 a year in income? Yeah, let's have a look. Yeah, so we just go 3,6,1,2,3. Oops. 3,6, divide that by 5. That's if you were getting 5%. What interest rates are you really getting out there? Right? Equals, we times that by 100, and it's £72,000. That one crappy little property in the back streets of a northern town, right, is throwing off the equivalent of somebody having £72,000 in a bank account. How many people I've got £72,000, and how long is it going to take them to save? Lifetime. The bit here is, how fast has that deal been put together? The best part of a year. Cha-ching. How many of those can you do? Right. And even if you only did one of those a year, it would be great. But going into the creating awareness about what we're doing and trying to get people to come in. The other bit is do some social media stuff. And I will say there's people doing social media good and there's people that are doing social media bad. People are out there saying, I'll give you 10% on your money on social media. So at some point, their lenders are going to cotton on what they're doing. Yeah. Or the the FCA, Financial Conduct Authority, or whatever it is, will say, you're doing a public promotion here. No, that's not what you do. You're showing the hard work that you're putting in. That's what the social media side of it should be looking like, that you're putting a lot of hard work in. So number one, the hearing, the conversations that you're having, that you're doing it. Number two, right, there's proof and evidence on social media that you're actually doing what we're doing. And then when we do have a deal, because those seeds are being sown so deep in people and they've started watching you and they can see that you're really pursuing this, right? When we do have a deal, right, we can pick up the phone and we can just say, Lisa, hi, remember how we were talking about that property stuff there the other week? Well, I've got a live deal in front of me right now, and I'm just about to go out to my angels, private investors, where I give them 8% on the money. And I just needed to know, is it something you want to get involved in or not? Simple script. I say simple, but every single word in that has been designed to make sure it works. Yeah. And if they say yes, what do we do? And if they say no, what do we do? Because most people think, oh, they said no, right? If one person, all we're relying on is one person, then we're not doing it properly. We need a list of about 30, 40, 50 people that we can call whenever we've got a deal. And even if they say no, we still win, because now we've gone from talking about it, we're actually doing, and they will watch us even more closely. And, you know, again, just the two boys that I'm working with there yesterday. Yeah. Right. I remember when they first started, and they've done that angel course three times, Parry. Yeah.
And then right. You go back.
Yeah. They just keep coming back. Right. So there they are. Right. We need the best part of £80,000. Yeah. And, could we do it on a mortgage? Yeah, of course we could. We could do it on a bridge, but the cost of the bridge would be up here, right? They're that confident now, they're going out and raising the full £87,000 for the full purchase, refit, and fees. Yeah. And one of their angels who had £10,000 with them, one of the conversations was, I'll give you 40. One of the other conversations with one of the other angels who had like 15 or something like that in there has gone up to 30. So they're not far off that full 87 that yeah. They're doing.
And I think another big thing there, Mark, is if you can spend your time looking for the smaller investors, the ones with the tens, the 20,000s. And I suppose those type of people, then that might be their only kind of savings, or that might be a large chunk of their savings. So the strategy then that kind of I adopted was, I'd rather go for the higher, the ones that have a higher level of money to invest. So I'm only dealing with one investor. Try to get the refinance out as soon as I can, or during the terms of what we've agreed, so that then they will recycle that money and they will come back to you, because there's nothing like credibility once you've actually raised the money and given their money back and done exactly what you said you're going to do, and then they just keep on coming back to you. From early doors, I suppose everyone's different, and it all depends on, like, you know, who they're kind of socializing with and who they're mixing with, and what level that they're comfortable with. But from early doors, I suppose I kind of said to myself, and myself and Porik have talked about this a few times, is, you know, I'd rather go for that one investor who can put in the whole purchase price than like kind of multiple 10, 20, 30,000 type investors. Yeah. Would you agree with that? Any investor sort of thing?
I mean, the hotel where we were on Monday, it's one of the girls that worked with me years ago, a lady called Donna McCloskey. And that was £1 million just to buy this hotel pub, right? One angel. When she first started out, it was £20,000-£30,000. Yeah. One of the other boys, he got £3,000 from an angel, right? £3,000. That angel is now up to £400.
Okay. So basically, by me kind of like ruling out the smaller ones at the beginning, I could have actually closed the door to bigger investors down the line.
Further down the line.
Just by the nature of it. Yeah.
One of the things that I do also, right? Yes, I do with the property stuff, but I run a bridging company. Yep. And in the bridging company, people do not want the money back. Right, because they're getting such a decent return, right? And if a deal's coming to an end and we're saying, right, it's going to be paid back, like, oh, no, please find us another deal. Find us somebody else, right? Because they're addicted to the income that we give them.
I find that, you know, you're dealing with people and you're just, you know, you're building rapport and they're bought into you as well as a person. You know, if your values are right and you're keeping them updated and you're being true to what you're doing, you know, and they do feel part of your business, you know, and they're so important. I'll give you, I suppose, one aspect of just dealing with individuals, but just sending out people that I've spoke to in the past, just a WhatsApp. Look what we're at now. There's a digger in the middle of the hall here, but what do you see this when it's finished? You know, so you're continually telling the wee story that this is what I'm doing. And look, I think this is something that, you know, when you do have challenges, it's better to have a conversation because sometimes it's not all rosy. It's not all rosy. Let's be honest. We've been in business. We all know the crack. You know, there is parts of it that you might go over budget or, you know, you might have to,
Might not get the value on the back end. All these things happen, and it's how you deal with it. People, when they invest with us, are investing in us. They're not investing in the property deal. They're not doing that, right? They're investing in you because they like, know, and trust you, and know your integrity, right? And you know, if people do get up a little bit uptight. Oh, I'm not going to be able to pay the angel back. Well, there's conversations that we can have with the angel because we are assuming that the angel wants the money back, right? All the money back. But the angel might be going, well, I'd be happy to leave 10, 20 grand in there until you're able to deal with it. You know, just working with two South African boys here, you know, their project in South London, right? Well, they've got the best part of £900,000 in angel finance, and it should have been round about a 15-month project. Well, we're 3.5 years in.
Oh, jeez.
Right? Whereas if you were working with a bank there, they'd have pulled that by now. Whereas the angels, as long as they're getting their money, the boys have income from other properties to do this, and it's all it's been down to is a stupid planning thing, which they forgot to do right at the beginning. It's cost them. Yep. Hey, it is what it is. Right? But it'll be a great little cash machine once it's up and running.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, Mark, we've been chatting for well over an hour nearly now. And Lisa, I suppose we could chat longer to Mark. He's just, you can see enthusiasm for helping people, but also getting up and getting on with it and telling it as it is too when it comes to the property side of it.
Yeah, I tell you.
Yeah, definitely. I don't think I've ever stayed quiet as long listening to Mark. Usually I'm the one doing all the chatting and that, but no, I'm definitely sat there the longest amount of time quiet, Mark. It was really, really insightful, and there's a lot to learn. And I suppose the other thing I get from the two of you then as well, and what makes you so like good in this industry then as well, is you have that sales background. So you're not afraid for rejection. And I think that's one of the big things is that with your sales background, you're probably so used to being told no the whole time. Whereas if you come from a different kind of background, maybe, you know, I come from the knowledge-based industry, which is where, you know, I had the knowledge. So therefore no one really ever said no too much, you know? So when I first got into this industry and they first started saying no, it was like it was an insult to my ego, to my character, you know. So it was a big kind of stumbling block. But now listening to you two guys, and you're in the sales kind of mode, you're well able to kind of, you know, take the nose on the chin and just kind of keep going and move forward. And I think that is a testament to both your successes, you know.
It's understanding a basic law in life, the law of averages. It doesn't matter how many no's you get, somebody will say yes. If you don't, you know, to me, people will go out and view houses, right, and not put offers on them, right? Mm. I go, put an offer out. Yeah, yeah, well, no, just put an offer out. Be really cheeky, right? Because you don't know if the vendor's going to say yes or not, yeah? And if you just keep following up on that until it's sold, you know, again, you know, those two boys there, the next door neighbour wanted £85,000 for that house that they're buying for £62,000. Well, they negotiated with him over a 5-month period while they fixed the property up, got it rented out, right? And as it got rented out, the guy had seen what they'd done and he went, yeah, go on, have it. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
No to me means that my message got out there.
Yeah.
Right. And I can follow up on that message as many times as I want to. Yeah.
And it is the challenge. Every no you get, you're getting closer to your yes. It is the laws of that. So I'll come back to it. Like, I suppose where Lisa comes from, it you can see, you know, she goes, right, where's the most money here? How can I get that first of all? But necessarily speaking, it takes time to get that particular bigger chunk than it does to get a smaller chunk. But if you do the research, and this is what I was explaining to Lisa before in the past, you can do research on the individuals you're trying to target now, obviously, and you can see. So if they do say no the first time, you can build, continue to build. And for example, one of my investors or angels, you know, they've a large fund, but I've got a small fund to start with. But I know if I keep continually prove what I'm doing, I'll get to the large fund. And, you know, that's how you build. How do you chop down a tree? You know, that's the so yeah. You look at it.
Well, a no to me means no just now. Doesn't mean no tomorrow. Doesn't mean no the day after. Doesn't mean no in a year's time. Yep. It's having that tenacity to again, I use one word right at the beginning of the conversation, strategy. This is all strategy driven. It's not random. Every little piece is all part of an overall strategy. Yeah.
Before I let you go, Mark, I suppose it's I work with Danny Ingham over in Manchester, and Danny, you're a mentor to Danny, and a lot of your aspects that you discuss is simple little things, and keeping your feet on the ground and not getting overwhelmed by things is a big part of it as well.
Yeah, it is. Don't start going too big, right? Getting outside your boots and all that type of stuff. Main bit is to stay as grounded as you can and as humble as you can, because what people do is it's that thing, you know. If you say, "Oh, I'm out there to buy a Ferrari and, you know, bigger house, bigger car, and all this type of stuff," your normal people that are working hard and putting money away just go like that to you. Behind your back, I'm just buying tiny houses, fixing them up and renting them out and doing it for my pension, right? That keeps us at everybody else's level.
Absolutely. How can anyone get in contact with you, Mark? You're avid. I know you say social media, but you're quite out there on social as well. You do a lot of good stuff.
Probably the best way to get hold of me is on either Facebook or on either Instagram. On Instagram, you'll find me Mark_Dalton_live. That's Mark_Dalton_live. Yeah. Whatever you do, don't Google Mark Dalton, because I am a gay porn star.
I didn't expect that.
You have the look, Mark, you know.
Well, we're talking multiple streams.
You have to look after your asset, Mark, you know. Huh? You enjoy that, Lisa. It's great chatting to Mark. Another fantastic, very first award-winning Solid Foundations Property Podcast. We could have chatted for longer, couldn't we, Lisa? But you enjoyed Mark and his conversation.
Yeah.
Exactly what
he would enjoy. It's been an honour, and I hope to be around sometime again soon in a couple of years.
We'll see you again, Mark. Thanks very much for joining us.
Okay, guys. All the best.